This is Monocle on Design, our weekly look at the best in architecture, craft, furniture, and fashion. I'm Nolan Giles. On today's show, we are off to the United States. We start by meeting the incoming curatorial director of this year's edition of Design Miami. We also hear from the designers who took part in the international event. And we talk to the Texan musical trio Krangbin, who share the commissioning process for their unique tour posters. All that coming up right here on Monocle on Design. Do stay tuned. Today's show begins in the US, where the 17th edition of Design Miami wrapped up last weekend. International critics, gallerists, and designers gathered to enjoy a program curated by the festival's new curatorial director, Wava Carpenter. Monocle's Toronto Bureau Chief Thomas Lewis caught up with Carpenter, as well as Design Miami's editor-in-chief Anna Karnick, to discuss this year's showcase. We start with Carpenter now, who begins by explaining the theme for this year's expo, Humankind.
The concept was really about kind of flattening the hierarchies between species, right? So that there's not the sort of arrogance from a human perspective that is sort of leaving all the other species just decimated in its wake. But that's moved more into also a intra-human sort of flattening of hierarchies as well, so that we stop sort of privileging certain groups of humans over others in our systems that we create. So yeah, we just invited everyone who is participating to sort of share any sort of vision for a more sort of equitable or interconnected future, a more harmonious world that way. And I'm really happy with how people have responded across the board. Brands in particular, I thought, really stepped up with strong social responsibility projects and messaging around the environment and broadening, you know, sort of participation of all different sorts of groups that are often left out of, especially worlds like Design Miami.
Yeah, this year the fair really featured a lot of new voices, which we're quite proud of, both on the fair floor through the exhibitions and then also through programming. So we've put together the most robust talks program in Design Miami's history, which we're very excited about, featuring both live talks and a special digital series of conversations, speaking with thought leaders to get their perspectives on this humankind theme.
And just to ask a pretty simple question, I just wonder how good it's felt for the two of you, but also how it's felt for the people that you've met and spoken to this week about being back at Design Miami in person once again. What's the mood and the energy been like there this past week?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've heard it described, the energy of the week, a couple of times as almost like a high school reunion or something, because, you know, we've all missed community. We've all missed face-to-face. I think we've all missed as well that kind of process or feeling and joy of discovery that you have when you're encountering new creative works and minds. So it's been a wonderful energy for sure, and a real pleasure.
Yeah, I think you can see that energy in the work as well. I mean, you feel it in the air on the sort of pathways of Design Miami, literally in the fair, but there's also a lot of work right now that is just very exuberant and joyful. And it's sort of two things are happening at once. There's sort of a fearlessness about having sort of strong messaging in the work, but then also a fearlessness on an aesthetic side that is just really going for it. We're just at such a historic inflection point culturally around the world, you know, geopolitically, you know, and on the one hand, there's sort of a, from the pandemic, but also from an environmental point of view, a questioning of how much sort of traveling and getting together internationally is needed. And at the same time, I think the pandemic also really brought to the foreground how much we do need this sort of in-person physical kind of connection with other people. And I think it's about finding the right balance. So, I mean, I expect there to continue to be these events because it makes people inspired. It brings such joy. It makes things happen that wouldn't happen otherwise. Just chance encounters, you meet people, that leads to another thing that happens. So I think there's just a sort of balance. And I think inside Design Miami, there's a lot of conversations about actually having more events internationally, but to really focus each of them more locally than they have been before.
And obviously an event as large as Design Miami takes a long time in the planning, is thought about for a while in advance. And I just wonder whether from a curatorial perspective or from an editorial one, whether this past year has sort of encouraged you to be more nimble, perhaps, in the way you form the ideas for an event that's going to take place sometime down the line. I just wonder whether it's impacted the way you make those decisions from a curatorial or a creative vantage point.
This year, especially, feels like curatorially and in terms of the editorial, it really is about responding to this moment specifically. And this moment, you know, we have a lot of questions. There's a not total clarity, of course, about the path forward, but that's been a great kind of emphasis of the content this year, both physically and online, is, you know, making sure we're spotlighting projects that are both responding to and reflecting on this current moment and also suggesting, you know, promising paths forward. So I think very much it's about being nimble and mindful of what's happening in kind of the larger zeitgeist.
I'm thinking about it quite a bit. You know, so far the task just came one time, you know, what should this show be about? And, you know, it was very clear that, you know, the past few years have just been paradigm shifting in a sense. And it would be remiss not to acknowledge that and ask people to respond to it. But, you know, the problems we have today are going to still be with us in 6 months when the next Basel show comes. And so, you know, it's still a question. And, you know, that's the task for the new year, is to sort of decide how much you want to shift to keep things fresh. But at the same time, acknowledge that, like, you can't just do one show and then, you know, problems are solved and you move on. And the next thing's all about how perfect everything is.
And you've both collaborated on a new project called Anava Projects. I say relatively new, as Wava, maybe you could explain. It's been a long time in the making, but perhaps you can explain Anava Projects to our listeners and how it came to be and what you aim to set out to do with it.
The big idea to launch Anava Projects happened in December 2019, where we thought we could put together some small things for the next Salone and kind of slowly build up a small agency that would help promote design for good, or designers that have a sort of social practice and needed a larger engagement or a larger audience. But of course, December 2019 was not the ideal time to launch anything, really. So Salone, of course, was canceled soon afterwards. But around that time, Design Miami, you know, decided they needed to have a larger online presence, like so many companies at that time when live events were canceled. So we kind of step by step moved into the Design Miami world again and, you know, have been working on their sort of website and slowly and surely also working on the live events. But we've kept Anava Projects going in the meantime. So on the Design Miami side, through Anava Projects, we've done a couple of fundraisers. And then, you know, we've curated a project for Carpenter's Workshop Gallery and just, you know, things here and there.
And Anna, to you, how broad of a church, I guess, do you hope that Anava Projects will be? Who do you hope will come into the fold?
We work a lot with supporting emerging designers and young talents. And so trying to give them opportunities to kind of tell their stories and share their work, both on the kind of collectible design gallery side, the sort of design fair platforms, but also, you know, working on public design commissions, for example, projects that allow young designers to kind of reach a broader audience through the public space. So it's a pretty wide audience, actually.
You know, one of the things is just like, this has been such an intense year. You know, Design Miami had a show in September in Basel, a show in Shanghai in November, and now we're just now in the last few days of Design Miami now in December. And I think there needs to be a moment of kind of like reassessing a bit. So we have some irons in the fire, as they say, but you know, I also don't want to commit to something too specific yet, because I think one of the most important things we can do right now is educate ourselves, listen more, like really observe and kind of see what is needed. And, you know, we're really looking forward to trying to find ways to fill some holes that are not being filled. And I just want to do that like carefully and considerately.
I'm just thinking that the wonderful news is that there's just so much great talent out there. And it really is, it makes our jobs really joyful and wonderful to be able to support emerging talents that we really believe in. That's been a really special project for us, for sure.
Anna Karnick there, Design Miami's editor-in-chief. And before that, Wava Carpenter, the event's incoming curatorial director. They were speaking to Monocle's Toronto bureau chief, Thomas Lewis. We'll be right back straight after this. Now, we continue with coverage from Design Miami, hearing from a few designers and makers who presented at this year's event.
My name is Feza Kemahlolu, and I'm the founder of Face Studio. We are based in New York. We are attending Design Miami for the first time with Wexler Gallery, and I'm showing my Pillars of Meerschaum collection here. I was born in Istanbul, Turkey, and I grew up with all these handcraft techniques that I saw in the Grand Bazaar or growing up, and I wanted to use kind of these materials in my lighting. So my pieces combine my Turkish heritage and culture with like my contemporary education that I got in the US. Design Miami was honestly one of my dreams to be part of. I was coming here like every year for the last 4 years until COVID happened. And just being here, there's incredible energy. All my favorite designers are here, and the emerging talent that is here is also like incredible to see. So as a lighting designer, I was just like, you know, always hoping to be with a gallery and showing here. I started working with Wexler Gallery 4 years ago, and we've been doing the Salon Art and Design Show in New York. And this year, finally, when we heard the news that we got into Design Miami, we were all so excited. And I worked nonstop since the summer to create these pieces. And just like landing in Miami from New York, you can't just help but smile. Like, it's just the weather, the energy, the people, everything is amazing. Design Miami is like the perfect size for the fair. It's not too big, it's not small. Everybody did something new this year. I think COVID really, I guess, like, even though it was such a hard time, it was also a very creative and inspiring time for many. And just walking around and seeing what everybody did, it's so amazing. And so I can't be happier, honestly.
My name is Stefan Weishaupt. I'm the founder and owner of Avenue Road. We are a furniture gallery based out of Toronto with showrooms in New York, Toronto, Vancouver, and Miami. I think it's been wonderful so far. I mean, everybody's been really excited about returning to Miami after last year's show being canceled. There's been quite a bit of a hype. And so far it's been really good, well attended. There's a lot of people, familiar faces, new faces. The fact that a lot of people were a little bit hesitant at the beginning also gave a lot of other companies and galleries the opportunity to participate this year. Feels like there's a fresh impulse this year. You can see like there's new faces, new galleries, and it's quite exciting. I think it's going to be very good, rejuvenating for the show to have these new people participating. It's become sort of a big tradition. It's a big thing in our calendar every year, that week here in Miami. And, you know, you see a lot of people from, definitely from Canada, from New York, from all over the United States, but also international clients, partners, designers. So they all come together. It's a nice sort of mix of people. In terms of new trends, I find that a lot of our clients have oriented their center of living a little bit away from maybe the big cities. A lot of people I've seen have moved to smaller cities. A lot of people have moved to more rural areas. When I look at also the projects I'm working on, you know, it's not necessarily New York and LA. It's about, let's say, Nashville. It's about, you know, Austin. It's about Denver. And I think we as a business will probably also adapt to that at some point. We have to adapt to that. At the end of the day, we have to also find places and opportunities to engage with our clients where they also are, where they want to engage with us. So Florida was definitely also one of those places where a lot of people have moved to, where they converted their secondary residences to their primary residence. So that was also definitely a big trend that has happened during COVID. Some have moved back since, but only a few. And I think some will be here to stay. So I do think that a place like Miami will become definitely more of a year-round kind of destination rather than just a winter-only destination.
My name is Lara Buchin. I'm a designer and I'm the founder of Buchin Studio. Felt like life was back to normal, to be honest. It felt very busy. There was a lot more people than I expected. It felt very busy, felt like people were buying and ready to spend money. I wanted my pieces to make you feel very cocooned and loved and happy. And so they almost look like they're kind of little animate objects, like little kind of desserts, good enough to eat. It was a body of work called Afternoon Tea. It was a pretty large collection of pieces which I created during pandemic. The body of work is all about longing for returning of rituals of gathering together with friends and family for the very simple, pleasant moments, like the ritual of afternoon tea. I mean, honestly, it felt great to see the real reaction compared to something that you launch online. You don't really get the feedback, but if you actually see the reaction in their eyes, nothing really can replace that.
My thanks to Feza Kamalioglu, Stefan Weishold, and Lara Bohink. They were speaking to Thomas Lewis. Finally, on today's show, we look to the world of graphic design and meet the Texan trio Krangbin. The band's otherworldly sound encompasses musical influences that range far and wide, and so it's only fitting that their posters do the same. For each pit stop on their current tour, the band has commissioned a local artist to produce a unique poster design. This show's producer, Maylee Evans, caught up with Krangbin to find out how their commissioning process works and some of their favourite designs to date.
I think as a music fan and concert goer, personally, it's really special to have a commemorative item from a show that you go to that's specific to that show. My name is Laura Lee and I play bass. In the same way that you get a tour tee for the entire tour, there's something really special about having something with the date that you went to the show and having that memory attached to it. So I think it started with kind of wanting to appease that sort of music fan. But then it's also become this great art project, curation project, finding different artists to make these posters very similar to me wearing a different outfit every night by a different designer, usually young and up and coming designer, to kind of shout them out. This is like a cool way to give some love to the artists and then also give love to the fans at each show.
Now, Laura, you serve as artistic director to this entire process, a curator of sorts who finds the artists to work with. What are you looking for in this process? What makes you think, yes, I really want to bring this artist or designer into the fold?
I find them through a wide variety of ways. I might find an artist on It's Nice That, then find other artists through that artist and kind of go down weird rabbit holes to find people. But usually the only question is, does it make me feel something? Which is something I learned from an old mentor, Tony Davidson, who's an awesome creative director. And obviously everything makes you feel something. But I think the point is, does it hit you in a way? It doesn't mean that it has to be a particular style. And in fact, our posters usually change quite heavily from night to night because it's not about being consistent with the types of graphics. It's just about finding something that feels meaningful and then reaching out to that person and going forth. And I always send to these guys to make sure that they are on board for, you know, what I'm feeling.
So let's go over to DJ and Mark. You've been on tour for a couple of months now, so which of the designs featured have really spoken to you so far? Could you maybe give a little bit of detail for the design? Mark, let's start with you before hearing from DJ.
The Santa Barbara poster, there's a lot of details, almost flowery. It's almost kind of like pastel. That one caught my eye because I remember seeing it when it was being passed around the WhatsApp thread, like, oh, you know, what do you think about this art? Like, oh, this is really, really cool. Seeing it in person and like feeling it, and like the tooth of the paper and all that kind of stuff. I really like that one a lot, so my face. The thing that I really like about any piece of artwork is how it looks up close, how kind of like wiggly the lines are, the texture, you know, like almost like it's been painted with sand. But that's not something you'd see when it's posted on social media or on the internet, because those kind of details just get like aliased out or noise reduction or vectorized.
The upcoming tour poster for the UK and Europe was actually really special. They actually just went through a couple of rounds of edits and refining it to kind of feel like we wanted it to feel, but I think it's really special and ended up coming out really mystical in a way.
Krungbin takes a long time to do a lot of things because we like to be involved so heavily in every aspect of what we do. And so while we aren't making these posters and, you know, we're putting the brief out to these artists and designers, we do go through rounds of approvals for every single one. And there's a lot of dates. So, you know, we'll be at soundcheck getting draft one of this show poster and draft five of something else. And it's an undertaking.
Despite the fact that these posters come from such a range of artists, and as you said, the styles vary massively between them, there seems to be a real cadence amongst them, a real sense that they belong to this wider Krungbin universe, if you will. I mean, the visual language that you've created over the last decade in your album covers, music videos, is quite expansive, but going back to the beginning when you were first crafting that visual language to match what you were doing sonically, what were you drawing from or where were you looking to for inspiration?
I used to do the majority of the early graphics, aside from our first album, our first full length, which was designed by Senator. He also did Capricorn Winter and Infamous Bill. Those were our releases and those were all UK based. But here in the States and a lot of the poster work and kind of iconography is stuff that I put together with LL. And it was pulling mainly from really, really old, like airline graphics. So I would do a lot of Googling and I would find defunct airlines. Some that aren't defunct that are still around but have significantly changed their logos or their profile or whatever. And I would generally start with that and then kind of deconstruct and then rebuild it.
You know, I'm looking for inspiration visually. Usually the answer is like already there or it's a part of you. And so Krungbin means airplane. So when we were pulling from old airline references, it's like, well, that's just really pulling from our name. You know, we have a lot of kind of space themed graphics around us, and it's because we're from Houston, which is a space city. That's just who we are and where we're from. The cows are because we record on a farm where there are cows. So it's sort of like, that is kind of our world, is this airline space cow. It's really fun to work with, you know, different artists. A lot of the artists I pull from do not make music posters. There are people that specialize in making music posters, but I'm usually finding people that do illustrations for magazines, sometimes brands, or just are artists in their own right. So when I give them the brief of like, you know, airline space cow, have fun, they usually, you know, get to have a good time. And now, especially because we're playing some pretty iconic venues, giving them the brief of drawing inspiration from the city or the venue has kind of added another layer. As creatives ourselves, we know the importance of feeling free and making what we make. So I think with working with other artists, you have to make sure you're giving them enough creative freedom.
Yeah, we try to give like a very small list of rules and limitations. And other than that, it's up to them to find the solutions for those parameters.
I like to have some visual representation of the band, and I usually put in bold letters that can be as abstract as you feel.
You know, it's not like if they don't follow the rules, we're like,
We've created a world where if you have a beard and two similar hairstyles, it looks like Crumpet. If there's a cow in a space helmet, it's also probably Crumpet. I list a wide array of visual cues they can pull from. And a lot of times, they pull all of them. We have one upcoming for Minneapolis, and there's like Prince reference, doves crying. It's like the Easter eggs inside of this poster are so amazing because he really like went all the way with pulling from every single possible inspiration I gave him.
It's all about like winks to the city. There was a time when maybe we had a little bit more time before playing a show that we would try to learn, you know, a song that's from that town. That like, if you were from there, you know it. And if you weren't from there, you might, but it's almost like, hey, you know, we hear you. We're always trying to quote things, and visual quotes are also part of the aesthetic of the posters.
One of my favorite moments in Crumpet history was our first show in Istanbul. Mark hinted a Turkish song we knew on his guitar. We just knew it because we had this CD. This was like, I guess Spotify was in its infancy, but we had no idea if anybody would know the song. But he just kind of referenced it and the crowd went completely wild. There's this real beautiful thing. It's like music and language that you can connect with people if there's something familiar. When you can have, I don't know, a Philly cheesesteak somehow in your poster in Philadelphia. I mean, that's a really bad reference, but like, you know, something that feels familiar to those people, like you really thought about them, even in the show poster. That's one of, you know, 100 in the year. Those are the things that connect you with your people.
Food, landmarks, music, not necessarily in that order.
Wonderful. And finally, this project of commissioning these tour posters, as you said, is quite an undertaking. Is this process going to be a feature going forward for the band?
Not going anywhere. It just takes some planning. I've advanced, I think, through the spring of next year.
Laura Lee, Mark Spear, and DJ there. They are the Texan musical trio Crangbin, and they were speaking to Monocle's Maley Evans. And that's all the time we have on today's show. If you're keen for even more design-related listening, then catch our five-minute midweek sister show, Monocle on Design Extra. It airs every Thursday. Today's show was produced and edited by Maley Evans, with editing assistance from Chris Ablakwa. Thanks to our researcher, Nick Manise. I'm Nolan Giles. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.